Hello, listeners. My name is Mark. If you have been enjoying the Listener Lore episodes, please come over to my separate podcast feed, Lorehammer Listener Lore. On this daily podcast channel, I will be reading one story a day and sharing your creative works with others and giving my feedback at the end. So, if you like grimdark 40k short stories, come join me at Lorehammer Listener Lore, the 40k podcast where you get to write the script.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you want to support the show, visit us at patreon.com, and for as little as $1 a month, you can become a patron. Or you can buy cool Lorehammer products like shirts, coffee mugs, and dice bags at www.redbubble.com. Don't want to spend any money? Well, you can help out the show by giving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also hop on over to Facebook and like our page, and feel free to send us a message. It's the only enjoyment Mark gets out of his miserable life.
Welcome back to Lorehammer. My name is Eric.
With help and generosity of some of my friends, I started a sound.
That one's Mark.
Here's my star collecting box so far.
Okay. Joining us also today for this bonus episode are Micah and Christian. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Today, we are going to be doing our third listener lore episode. So if you haven't listened to one previously, we've asked for submissions of people's their story on their homebrew chapter or their Xenos race or whatever, anything that they've created, which we will then share and we will discuss and talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, what we'd like to see more of, stuff like that. So we will read it as is, which will include
ifs, ands, and buts.
Errors.
Oh, oh. Yeah. Not just words.
Well, it will include words, but some of those words will not go together as they are meant to. So,
yeah, and it's really weird. Whenever I read them, it seems like I always get the...
You get the ones with
the most errors in them for some reason.
Well, that's just dyslexia. Anyways, we're going to take you through three stories today submitted by three people. And the first one we're going to read is... Christian is going to read the first one, and it's submitted by Tim.
Tim, yes.
Thank you, Tim.
I don't know anything about it.
No, I don't either.
First read through, like, I don't even know what it's about. So
if you don't have voices for people,
yeah, get out.
I'm going to be mad.
All right. I'll do my best. Okay. Originally founded as the headquarters of a mining expedition sent by the Forge World Graia to the area of space known as the Rust Belt during the Dark Age of Technology. Using technology that has now been forgotten, the expedition was able to tether five other moon-sized entities together with the first. Cut off from the rest of the Imperium during the Age of Strife, the expedition actually fared better than most other human worlds. Rediscovered by the Great Crusade, the mining expedition was at first suspicious of the people who turned up on their doorstep, but after discussion with the Imperium's Mechanicus ambassador, the expedition was brought into compliance and reclassified as a Forge World Rubigo.
Dumb bitch.
During the Knights of House Koldir and the forces of Forge World Rubigo joined forces after a huge orc wa destroyed the Knights' homeworld of... period.
Yep, that's right.
Yep.
The wa was eventually pushed back into the Veiled region. House Koldir was gifted a moon on Rubigo to use as a staging area. House Koldir hunts the orcs to this day and uses this now as a ritual to induct new pilots. Even when the question of a new Grandmaster comes up, a grand hunt may be called with all the candidates gunning for the biggest kill. Rubigo is a collection of moons tethered together by structures through which giant trains run all the various materials needed by the Forge World. Although the trains are the main means of transport between the various moons that make up Rubigo, there are maintenance walkways between the moons where many servitors continuously work to keep the various tracks working. Jeez. And the flow of material nonstop. The six moons are fully self-contained, and if in need, the whole system can be towed to another location. The orbiting moons can be ejected in an emergency. Rubigo is ruled by a council of seven.
I love this already.
I know, it's so 40K. It's so 40K. Like, over the top.
Rubigo is ruled by a council of seven, which includes the Fabricator General of Rubigo and his three highest tech priests, alongside the Grandmaster of House Coldier and his two highest advisors. Six individual moon-sized entities make up the Forge World of Rubigo. One, mainly used as a staging area for the forces of Rubigo and House Coldier and their accompanying spacecraft, serves as an anchor point when being towed. Two, main spaceport used by the mining fleets of Rubigo. All visitors to Rubigo dock here. Housing for visiting crews are found here. Serves as an anchor point when being towed. Three, House Coldier. Four, main power supply for rest of Rubigo. Five, personal forges, workshops of the highest ranking tech priests of Rubigo. Six, main manufactorum of Rubigo. Contains the forges, workshops of lesser tech priests. Also houses the meeting place of the ruling council. Tech priest Dominus Invictus Acquisitor, expedition leader, Serdak or Kurdak. Tech priest Aristan Mechasapient, Eremiel. Tech priest Logai, monitor Malevolus, Puella. Forge World Rubigo, colors, Wa green robes, Warblock bronze armor, Mechanicus standard gray.
I like that he actually used the paint colors.
Mechanicus standard gray weapons, red gloves, and boots. Nighthouse allied to Forge World Rubigo, House Coldier, similar colors as Forge World. Working with the Forge World Greya and Mars in Rustfield's war against the orcs amidst the asteroid belt, near the Veiled Region. Omnisia Machine God, Arc Mechanicus Spaceships, Aura Flamma, Gold Flame Main Ship, Ferrum Malleus, Iron Hammer. And that's it.
So his, like, okay. So moons rotate.
Sure.
Like they orbit.
Sure.
Right? But it almost sounds in this one like, like he's created like a still system. Like the planet rotates and the other ones are like bolted to it hundreds of thousands of kilometers away from it. And they just spin way faster than the regular one. Because the trains, I'm assuming they're like grav trains or whatever. Like they don't run on rails. But part of me wants them to run on rails.
No, it says that there's a physical structure, doesn't it?
Yeah, it says they're connected. And there's so walkways.
That means they cannot rotate, which means that they are spinning so much faster than that planet is. Right?
I guess that's hilarious.
Or
the planet's not even spinning. It's possible that nothing's spinning.
It could all be geostationary.
No, geostationary is it's rotating with the planet.
That's geosynchronous.
Oh, no.
I don't know. Whatever. It's not rotating.
Tidally locked is words.
Anyways, if it is spinning, they're spinning ridiculously fast. If they're not spinning, it kind of like, it makes me think of like a palm. Like in the center of your palm is the planet, and then all around your palm are these moons that are tied to this planet.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
They eject a moon. Like I imagine they have like a plan to like throw a moon at something.
Into the sun.
Well, no, if they're like, hey, we need to attack this like other thing, the space hook that's coming at us and it's massive, let's throw a moon at
it. Planet.
I think it's last resource.
Of
but,
course. Yeah. Of course that's last resource.
You're gonna run out of moons
pretty quick.
It can move though.
Yes.
Does that imply that the planet are detached and they're their own kind of superstructure?
Well, like it's towable, so I feel like they took moons from planets
and made this,
and
structure.
Made this structure.
Yeah, yeah, it's almost like a spaceship that's not even a moon anymore.
Yeah,
it just uses moon rock bodies that they've built on.
Okay, they're all moons.
Yeah. And but,
so there's no planet.
No,
the implication is that they maybe came from a planet once.
They stole them from planets. They tethered five other moon-sized entities. So they could have been asteroids. They could have been moons.
Anything can be a moon.
Exactly.
It doesn't have to be like the moon-sized.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Of course, yes.
They
we all know this.
Tethered them together. Okay, so there's no singular planet that they're orbiting. I got that in my mind wrong. But it is just these massive
satellites. Like a massive spaceship.
That are connected. And so they must have just massive engines built into them.
No, they're towed.
They're towed.
But how?
Were you not listening, Eric?
I get
Planet
it,
one and two are towed.
No.
Two is
the anchor first point. One, that's like the, so the five moons are tethered to the first one.
Yeah.
So the first one must be
is the
like
central one?
The central one.
It doesn't say how they're tethered. It could be like a tree of life configuration, for lack of a better word.
God damn it, Tim.
I like it. Honestly.
Tim, so, we're just trying to do the math here. And attach it with this for next time.
Yeah. Just draw a little stick figure picture.
Go into paint. Just make the circles.
The circles are like wobbly. And like,
yeah. Like that he didn't use the stencil. He just literally drew it.
That one's just straight up a square.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's so sick.
There's a night house on there. There was a wah that came through.
Yeah. I pretty much personally pictured as like almost like they turned into a giant Space Hulk, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
Using like planetoids and like building on it and like connecting them.
Yeah.
It's its own spaceship almost.
Yeah.
Without its own thrusters.
I like the planet definitely better than like, there's a night house on it. Cool. There's guardsmen. Cool. There wasn't really any details. About
yeah. Not a
them,
lot of depth,
which I would like to see.
Yeah. He did have the little hunt thing, which is cool. I enjoyed that personally.
Yeah.
It's very medieval.
Yeah. But like, the focus is definitely all, like, we just spent 5 minutes trying to talk about five moons, but I would like to see personally, some more about depth. The night house, or are your tech priests like, they must be pretty like out there with their technology if they're grabbing planets and tying them like, together. You
what's
know?
Their deal? They're just named to us, but it doesn't mean anything.
So
Yeah,
it's a cool setting, definitely, for sure.
Exactly. It's a great setting so far. I'd like to know more about it.
The actual definitely. Army associated with this.
Sure.
Yeah.
We did it?
I think the Ari Flamma, that's their main tower ship.
Oh, yeah.
That just tows it. Like, that's such a wild picture. Like,
yeah, this massive cruiser just towing these five moons, six moons across the galaxy.
So can they go into the warp?
Why not?
Oh, my God. That's a... You need a macro Geller field for that.
Or you just need many Geller fields around the planet. Around it.
No, but you'd also have to have Geller fields around the walkways and the train system, wouldn't you?
You would need many Geller fields for sure.
Or one big one.
That'd be huge.
But how big
a Geller field can be. Because even ships are pretty massive in 40K.
No, I know, but
and
like,
who's to say how big these moons are?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we have no
moon
sense
sized.
Of scale.
They're moon-sized.
Oh, well, that's good.
Like,
thank you.
I'm assuming
thank you, Death
sized.
Star. Yes. That's no moon.
On Titan, though, they didn't use, like, they used macro Geller fields is what they called them.
Sure. So
and
maybe they
many,
just had the
many
most powerful
other
psychers. Because the Geller field's power is directly tied to how powerful that
psyker
is
inside.
So maybe they just had
one power.
Maybe they had even multiple psychers tied into a macro Geller field.
Maybe that's what makes it macro.
Yeah. It's just multiple psychers, but
all fetus
don't
together.
Have the science.
We don't know. Anyways,
we want to know. Though.
It's a really cool world, obviously.
What I like about it too is since it can travel, it can be like it's galaxy playing thing. Like
it always sucks when you're stuck in one part of the galaxy.
You can fight Eldar. Yeah. You can fight everything.
Like he could show up at the Vigilus campaign and be like,
"I brought my moons with me."
You know, like I really
well, I couldn't let
that.
You take on everyone by yourself. Some Harrison Ford line.
Great shot, kid.
Fuck.
Yeah. Anyways, it was pretty cool.
Enjoyed it.
Yeah, the tech priests. We know that they're there, and obviously they're supplying the night household, but like what other like what specific technologies do they really like, or
yeah, it'd be
what
cool
else
to
are
get
they
some,
developing
some stuff.
The night household tells them where to go, right? Like what are they defending?
They have like their council or whatever with like three night lords and then
the Grandmaster.
Three tech priests, yeah.
Yeah,
it's like three like, and three. It seems like an even balance of their ruling together.
It's 4-3.
Oh.
Yeah.
So they have four for the Mechanicum,
three for them. But is the Mechanicum being like, hey, go over here, or are they getting orders from...
Well, they're getting to vote, so in a council, like, democracy,
That's not how councils have to work.
No, I'm just...
Usually
I'm,
that's
like,
how that would work.
No,
though.
I'm
you
more
know,
wondering,
petition
like...
Who would vote, and then everyone votes?
Not everyone votes in the council, Mark.
They just talk.
I'm more wondering, like, where do they get their information from?
Where does anybody?
The Imperium.
Sure. So that's what
Who like leads any Mechanicum Lord?
Like, they're
self determined. Yeah,
they're like. They're,
what is their motivation?
Sure.
What is their
more moons?
Motivation? More moons. They're moon thieves
just trying to find. More moons.
They just show up. Like you see them just like these cables slowly latch onto your moon and then they just start trying
to stop that.
They drive away and the moon is just being towed away.
Spaceballs feel good. Cool. Anyways, let's move on.
Yeah.
Cool. The next one we're going to read is Graham's, and I will be reading half of it, and then Micah will be reading the rest of it.
Very poorly, but yes.
Because it's a long one. Okay. Vederfold. It's a forest world. It is a terrestrial planet located in...
Carnivorous or deciduous? Deciduous.
Carnivorous. Carnivorous. It's a carnivorous forest world. Sorry, start again, Eric.
Deciduous?
Deciduous.
Vederfold is a terrestrial planet located in a singular star system within the Space Wolves Imperial footprint. The planet is about 1.5 times the size of the Earth. It has many similarities to Earth in that it is tilted and rotates on its axis. A Vederfold day is about 1.2 Earth days, or 28 hours. It has an atmosphere, magnetic field, and plate tectonics. However, due to its size and position with relation to its star, it is on average a colder planet than Earth. Imagine an Earth where the Tropic of Cancer and the Tropic of Capricorn are the new equator, and remove all the Earth between the two tropics. While the equator does have areas of warm, moderate climates, especially along coastlines, most of the inhabitable zone consists of vast forests of varying types, from deciduous to evergreen.
There we go! Yes. We answered it!
Now we know.
These are the questions.
There are large mountain ranges, and volcanic activity is about equal to that of Earth, with the exception of one volcano in particular. Towards the poles, the planet is mostly frozen. The Jotunbi are an industrious Xenos race of insect-like composition. On Vederfold, warring factions of Jotunbi control various regions of the world, each controlled by a mother queen and daughter queens. Mother queens give birth to daughter queens and control drone armies. Daughter queens give birth to various drone types and are generally hidden from society and each other. More to follow on the Jotunbi. But when a mother queen is killed or dies, it generally creates a power vacuum and results in several lesser mother queens, formerly daughter queens, aided by loyal drones, dividing territory. Drones is the word used for most Jotunbi, but they are not drones like typical insects. They each have their own thoughts, viewpoints, ambitions, alliances, and so forth. While the majority of Jotunbi are very loyal to the mother queen, many are more loyal to the daughter queen that gave birth to them. This makes for interesting dynamics within the Jotunbi society, and is also the main reason they have never united, and probably never will. Some drone ideas. The Jack. A massive male drone. Only the largest Jotunbi factions have one. More massive than a mother, but lacks intelligence. Striders. Long-legged, can sit or walk on water surfaces. Winged Menace. Drone warriors that have wings. Warriors, a standard drone soldier, four arms, two legs. Workers, small bumbling idiots that provide essential tasks for the Jotunbi. Humans are far smarter, stronger, and better workers because they can think about their tasks, hence slavery.
So we all can fit into one of those categories. I know which one I'm in, that one.
Are you the Jack?
No, I'm
the Christian.
Yeah.
I wasn't listening. What's a Jack?
A massive male drone, but lacks intelligence.
I'm the worker.
That's right.
That just lacks Lumbling. Intelligence, period.
Right. And Eric is the queen.
Makes sense. Jotunbi note. The mother queen is a huge creature, capable of great feats of fighting. She leads armies and is a very formidable opponent. Daughter queens are plump and usually immobile, Ooh. As they are biologically in give birth mode. They do not fight. Every so often, a mother queen will break from war to birth a new daughter queen. The act is very secretive. Thousands of years ago, the Jotunbi became aware of their existence within the universe. In a hasty alliance, they decided to hide themselves from life existing outside of their planet. The volcano, now known as Halaldranari, was transformed into a funnel into space. The constant flow of dust particles, mostly consisting of iron and calcium, created a dust cloud around the planet. Due to the interaction between the dust and outer atmosphere of the planet, the dust turned red-orange in color and obscured the planet. Enough light is allowed to pass through the dust cloud to support ample life on the planet. Anyone looking at the planet would A, think that it was now a giant gas planet, and B, have a hard time detecting the life below. It is not impossible to detect life. Due to the star system being relatively small and uninteresting, it's really just sheer luck that no one found the secret of Vederfold until Tzeentch did in M31 or M32.
Dun, 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 dun.
Ooh, I like this. At some point long ago, a civilian transport ship carrying several million human civilians crash-landed onto Vederfold. The people of the ship were within Space Wolf Protectorate and lived in their culture, think Scandinavian or Viking. The Jotunby enslaved most of the surviving population. Humans were very useful slaves, as they allowed the creation of more soldier-type drones. However, there were also many human settlements, and many Jotunby slaves formed resistance bands. Setup. Chapter Zeench and Vederfold. After the second founding, the Space Wolves began working on a solution for the flawed Canis Helix gene seed. During the Battle of the Fang, Magnus the Red killed the wolf priest Thar Hraldir and destroyed all progress that he had made. However, after the failure of the Wolf Brothers, the Space Wolves did not want to attempt another successor chapter through the proper Imperial channels. Thar Hraldir had made progress on the new gene seed, but it was not yet complete. Secretly, Herrick Ironhelm approved a small successor chapter experiment to be performed. They would go in search of an appropriate planet with a small task force of Space Wolves infantry, 3 Wolf Priests, 3 Iron Priests, and 3 Rune Priests. They would have plenty of supplies to start the new chapter. They also took several Thunder Wolves and Fenrisian Wolves. They would never be seen or heard from again. Meanwhile, Zeench was forming a plan to create a bridge between the warp and physical space. Zeench noticed a small but volatile hotspot of warp storms, which manifested near and around the planet of Vederfold. Zeench reconnoitered the planet.
Reconnoitered.
Of course.
Recon.
Zeench reconnoitered the planet and found it was already hidden from the Imperial records. Upon full release of the warp storm energies around Vederfold, Zeench was able to use his dark sorcery to pull the planet into the warp. Using...
I'm scared.
You puckered. Using this hotspot of warp activity, his plan was to create a mirror image of the planet in real space. His sorcery was successful, essentially creating a planet that spanned the warp and real space. However, there were some unforeseen consequences. The warp activity around Vederfold prevented nearly 100% of entry into the planet. Zeench was unable to get his demons onto the planet, and his plan for a bridge to the real world was greatly set back. The small task force of Space Wolves was flying nearby Vederfold as the warp storms released their full energy. The warp storms caused the task force to crash land onto Vederfold as it was pulled into the warp. Initially, the Space Wolves fought Jotunby to devastating effect, but the Jotunby were too many and were not defeated. Much of the planet was still controlled by various Jotunby factions. However, the Space Wolves, ever mindful of their mission, began working on their successor chapter. Slowly but surely, Zeench whittled away at the mysterious warp shield that surrounded Vederfold. Eventually, he was able to pass through a single demon. As time progressed, Zeench was able to get more demons through the warp energy surrounding the planet. Up until the current time, he has never been able to get large amounts of demons onto the planet from the warp, but he has put several thousand on the planet. These demons have established small fortresses on the planet with several thousand human and Jotunby cultists. Note 1. Once on the planet, Zeenchian demons are able to exist easily and do not require much energy to possess humans or other hosts, since the planet is caught between the warp and the physical realm. Note 2. The warp energy around Vederfold prevents most entry onto the planet, both from the warp and the physical realm. However, the warp storms do not prevent departure from Vederfold. The warp storms are volatile and are not always at the same strength. Most of the time, the warp storms are in full effect, and if one were to leave the planet during this time, they would leave into the warp. But every once in a while, the storm calms to a point that allows exit into the physical realm. The growing Space Wolves successor chapter, the Jotunby, and the Zeenchian demons and worshippers constantly battle for the planet. The Jotunby are by far the most populous on the planet, while the Astartes and Chaos have their own bastions of land controlled. And I think that's all I'm reading. Yeah, that's all I'm reading.
Sure. The Rise of the Chainborn, Gunolf. Oh my gosh, there's so many names. And they're all Scandinavian, frick. Okay.
Start calling them Tim and Paul.
Paul. Gunnar Haraldsson, a.k.a. Gunolf Chainborn, born as a slave on Vederfold. The Resistance rescued him, and when he was about 8 years old, therefore still having a bitter taste of slavery, but also able to shed any passive traits through being brought up by Resistance fighters. During a battle with the Jotunby, he was directly responsible for killing a Mother Queen at only age 13. He was the first person from Vedrafold to be rescued by the wolf priests. The story is that one night a stranger came upon a human warband. Initially alarmed by his abrupt appearance, the humans...
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Retrieved their weapons and became alert. The stranger spoke quietly, but with great authority, and asked the youth to come forward and face him in single combat. Gunnar immediately burst forth from the warband before his elders could stop him and engage the wolf priest. Although he was soundly beaten, the wolf priest was impressed and quipped, "Once Gunnar, now Gunnulf." Gunnar roughly translates to fighter, and Gunnulf roughly translates to fighting wolf. He'd also take the name Chainboard, as to remember his homeworld and origins. Gunnulf's Canis gene seed would turn out to be pure, a sign of great hope for the Space Wolf task force sent to make the successor chapter. But this would not last, and as the chapter grew in strength, up to 30% of the new Astartes would become Wolfen. Gunnulf Chainboard has little empathy and little emotion. He's very close to being a psychopath, a very good manipulator, and is also what some would consider to be a genius. This mental state would normally be identified by the tests administered to new Space Marine recruits, but due to the lack of resources, Gunnulf continued the process to become an Astartes. While he struggles with emotion, he does not have emotion. While he struggles with emotion, he does not have emotions, but they are broad sweeping. As in, he generally knows what is good and bad, but doesn't necessarily feel guilt, sadness, love, or anger. There's one thing he does care for, though, and that is the people of Vedrafold. This caring trait is important to him because it gives him a connection to humanity, a connection he can't get anywhere else since he has so little emotion. Once the chapter reached a couple hundred strong, the remaining Space Wolves gave leadership of the new chapter to a member from Vedrafold. Gunnulf, obviously, was elected as the first wolf lord of the Chainborn. The Chainborn would be colored a dark green as homage to the forest world Vedrafold. The chapter would take the badge of chains on a background of orange, inspired from the sky of Vedrafold. Unit and rank insignia would be denoted by a V on the right pauldron in the colors consistent with Space Wolf's heraldry. Despite his mannerisms, Gunnulf is still well loved by his men. He takes care of them, and many appreciate his tactical superiority. They also tend to take on his lack of empathy with enemies and civilians, but are still just as rowdy and boisterous as their Space Wolf father chapter. Since their creation, the Chainborn have become known for their crushing brutality. Many of the campaigns result in very few prisoners, alluding to their sound tactics and extremely harsh attitudes towards their enemies. They have no patience or care for civilians on the battlefield, making the human population on Vedrafold both in awe and terrified of them. The Chainborn are also known for their commitment to remembering the fallen members of the Chainborn and Space Wolf chapters. Celebrations in the Chainborn are always begun with several ceremonies, honoring and singing the songs of Chainborn that have died in battle. Since the Chainborn have been fighting demons and chaos followers so long, they tattoo, brand, and fillet runes onto their bodies that aid them in fighting chaos. The Chainborn follow the Space Wolves Codex. Duh. Recruitment. Wolf priests prowl the lands of Vedrafold, looking for young warriors, both free and enslaved, worthy of joining their ranks. Just like the Space Wolves, after a new recruit takes the Canis Helix, he is thrown into the wilds of Vedrafold and left to return to the forest monastery of the Chainborn. If he survives the demons, the Jotunbi, and all the other deadly wildlife on Vedrafold, then he is welcomed. Afterwards begins the remainder of the process to turn the youth into a Space Marine. The Chainborn have a large amount of Wolfen and impure gene seed. They have discovered the truth of the Wolfen and do not treat them as the Space Wolves did for many millennia. The Chainborn know that Wolfen still have the warriors of the Astartes inside them, even though they may not be able to communicate with them through speech. While the Wolfen are most certainly not well integrated into the everyday life of the Chainborn, Chainborn Wolfen are included in many aspects of the war and culture. Many amongst the Chainborn wonder if the Wolf brothers could have been successful if the Inquisition had not stupidly interfered. The fall of Gunolf. Gunolf cares greatly for the people of Vederfold, but as a near psychopath, also desires the power. Mark is taking a video. Gunolf cares greatly for the people of Vederfold, but as a near psychopath, also desires power more fervently than most men. In an epic turn, Gunolf is tricked by Tzeentch and falls into his service. He takes about a quarter of the Chainborn with him and forms a Chaos Space Marines chapter. This greatly sets back the Chainborn and causes even more turmoil on Vederfold. More to be determined. Skard Erikson was elected as a new leader of the Chainborn, a beast even amongst his Space Marine brothers. Skard is a strong leader and true of heart. He established a more frequent schedule of feasts and games, and as the Chainborn had their morale nearly broken by the betrayal of Gunolf. He's quick to laugh and level-headed on the battlefield. He also takes on many traits similar to Harald Deathwolf and has incorporated more wolves and thunderwolves into the Chainborn ranks. The Chainborn discover the secrets of the warp activity surrounding Vederfold and are able to leave the planet into the physical realm for the first time. They hope to reunite with their father chapter, gain support to exterminate the filth on Vederfold, and fight in wars alongside their brothers in the Great Black Ocean. Chainborn special equipment to be determined. Chainborn strength. The Chainborn are about 300 to 400 strong. They consist almost entirely of infantry, rune priests, and wolfen. While they have some light armored vehicles and troop transports, they do not have any primaris marines.
Oh, hot damn!
Wow.
I'm in.
Or dreadnoughts or heavy armor. Chainborn allies to be determined. Chainborn enemies. Tzeentch, Chaos, and the Jotunbi. And Chainborn rivals is the CSM, led by Gunolf.
Chaos Space Marines.
Yes.
Very cool.
Yeah. Sick flavor.
Okay. You guys are looking at me. I'll give my input.
I don't know.
Yeah, share your input. What's your thought?
I really like it.
Yeah.
Okay, what's your input?
The planet is well fleshed out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have a really cool alien race that obviously...
Is it weird that I root for the alien, the Jotunbi more than anything else? Is it?
Yep.
Okay. You don't like space wolves though, right?
They're not great. Space wolves, in their essence, they've got some really weird things that if they just removed would make them awesome again. Mm-hmm. But anyways, but the planet is very well...
Yeah.
Rounded.
Even as like the elements that the planet was made out of, and
yeah,
and like,
oh, it's awesome.
Like it's covered by cloud, and the reason they did this is because of the Jotunbi like created this volcano that covered their planet in a cloud.
Yeah,
and like it's really cold, it's mainly forest, but there is like some ocean. He said because there's a beach, and so he's given it like a lot of like a very descriptive thing of this planet.
Yeah, fleshed out. Like I feel like he did a better job than. Like a lot of minor Xenos races that are actually existing.
Yeah.
So there's like tons of flavor there. One thing that I thought was interesting was they like take human slaves so that they can make more like military drones, which almost implies that they can actually like choose what specific types are going to be birthed.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Cause then they don't have to birth builders or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Which is cool.
As one does.
Like once the queen births a larva, it just depends on where you insert the sperm.
Obviously.
Into the larva.
Different wombs like for different outputs.
That's right. the Jotunbi are pretty cool. I like the Tzeentchian play in it. You know, the warp and God's always trying to get out of the warp and he's pulling it in and creating this mirror and it's half in, half out. And
it's a nice way to limit like the impact that chaos can have by having this like wall where it's like there's enough forces there to have some good conflicts, but it's not like unrealistic that the people are still surviving.
Yeah.
I like all the ties to Nordic mythology.
Oh, shut up. Of course you do. No. Add it to your history, Christian.
Okay, I'm curious. Are there actual ties to Nordic mythology?
The Jotun.
Yeah.
The Jotun.
Giants.
Frost giants.
Yeah.
Oh.
And the war between frost giants and And
oh, my gosh.
I have a question.
I get some Loki vibes from Tzeentch and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And the bridge.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
The rainbow
bridge. Trickster.
Yeah.
I have some questions, though. I wonder, like, in... For Graham, like when you play, do you mainly play against like Tzeentchian armies, Chaos Marines, and maybe like Tyranids? That's as close to Jotunbi as we're gonna get. But I wonder if he plays against them.
Yeah.
Plot twist, he plays a Jotunbee. That's the whole reason he designed everything.
Well, yeah, I'm wondering if he actually plays against them and,
yeah.
And, if he's ever built anything about that. And, but, it was really cool. I liked Gunolf. I liked the fact that, he was a psychopath and I always would assume that they would love psychopaths, but it sounded like they wouldn't like psychopaths, but they had to make do with him.
Who's they?
The rune priests that were responsible for recruiting him.
Can I go on a quick 10-minute rant?
No. Quick. 10 minutes?
Quick 20 minutes. It'll be fast 10 minutes.
So
I don't think that's how time works.
Works how I say it.
Well, it'll be a quicker 10 minutes than the 10 minutes I'm about to take.
So. Okay.
No, do your thing. Finish your thought.
No, that was it. I like the fact that they needed people anyway.
Yeah.
I also like the fact that he didn't create a pure, clean gene seed. That he's like, they thought it was, and they were really happy with it, and then it turns out, no, they're just as...
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a little bit worried.
Which is nice.
I was a little bit worried at first. I was like, oh, no, we're going to go like all Mary Sue with this. But
then, exactly. Oh, no, that was what I was worried about, too. Yeah. But then he's like, no, they do fall short of it, which is awesome.
Yeah, and at least his fall, even. And like, there's a whole saga element with that, where it's like his whole life and
death. Yeah. So I
hate when you look at me.
I genuinely enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, it's solid.
I would like to see little 500 point armies, like cultists with Jotunbee with humans all in one little army. I'd like to see all this. So if you got more of this, send us pictures. Because I like, there's so many cool little like factions that you can do.
Yeah, like it'd be sweet if you played on like ice terrain. Like you had like a board with like snow covering it and trees everywhere. Just like a temple in the back with a bunch of like Xenchian demons and Chaos Space Marines on one side and Jotunbee with human slaves on the other.
Okay, so I'm curious, is there really like a strong presence of Chaos Space Marines with like their parent chapters like flaws? So something that came from Salamander is black skin, or in this case, like Wolfen Chaos Space Marines? Is that a thing?
Oh, and say that again?
Are there Wolf and Chaos Space Marines?
Yeah, like...
Or like, if Blood Angels... Like, if you go down, are you still a victim of the Red Thirst and the Black Rage?
I imagine it's... Yeah, like, why wouldn't you be?
Because I just haven't seen any, like, Wolfy Chaos models.
There exists even, like, a sub-faction. I don't know if it was a fan creation or if it was in...
That could be kind of cool, though, to see, like, him model, like...
The Blood Wolves?
Take, like, his regular guys and then just chaos them up, like, pretty hard.
Yeah, like, all these... There's so many great little army ideas, possibilities in here, yeah.
But, yeah, it would make sense. Or, like, Red Thirst, like, Chaos Blood Angels would be sweet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. 10-minute, 5-minute rant?
Sure.
2-minute rant? Okay. Kind of side-related, but just kind of I thought of it while we were doing this. I always like to think that most Space Marines are pretty much psychopathic anyways, and those are traits that you would want in them. Like, there's something detached from humanity, like, on a personality level. And that's not always the case, and, like, it's based on chapter culture and blah, blah, blah. But just a cool little thing, I thought.
So not even
remotely. That was 10 minutes?
I was exaggerating.
Well,
yeah, I agree with you. I think it's like salamanders, like they obviously really care that's what makes them about stand being out. Connected to their family. Yeah. Whereas like you want to be a night lord, you're probably a little bit of a pariah.
Yeah. Psycho, yeah.
Yeah, a psycho.
And like really like...
You want to be a world eater? You just have to love corn.
Have you ever seen Soldier? The movie? I think it came out in
the 90s. There's literally a movie called Soldier.
Yeah, it came out in the 90s and like...
There's going to be a movie called 90s. Man. One probably called Gun. Is.
Yeah. It's a good movie. Watch it. There's a lot of stuff. Probably Halo-inspired stuff. Anyways, they have super soldiers and they're all like psychos, but they're the main characters you root for. And like they don't care about like civilians and casualties. And like they just do their job because that's their job.
But with what he's saying, he's like maybe these guys specifically don't like psychopaths because you need like a sense of joviality and like
kinship. Yeah, and especially with Space Wolves.
Yeah, because you're like a partier.
Too far the other way, I think, where they're they care about like, feasting and culture.
So normally the Space Wolves would not take him, but they were so strapped for resources, they did, and then he led them, and then it turns out they would have made the right call all along because he fell, and
it's kind of cool. It's really tangential to all of
but this. I think it fits in quite well with like his thing with their belief that like they never would have accepted him because they view that as a flaw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like within his character and personality, and they're like, no, we wouldn't touch it, but they had to, and then it led to maybe directly or indirectly led to him falling to chaos, and it's kind of cool. It I like it. I think it's pretty well thought out.
Yeah. And the characters have personality and stuff. They're not just names. It's like got a backstory. The planet has a backstory. Alien races. Yeah.
So
a
lot long of detail. But worth the read.
Yeah, for sure. Solid. I was interested.
That's right.
We did it.
One cool. more.
And anyone else have anything to say about that?
No.
Am I the only one who just wants to know more about those Jobials?
I don't know.
Yodenbees.
I don't play tabletop. So I, for me, like when they don't go super in depth on the technical stuff, because I don't relate to that.
Yeah.
That's more so where I'm like,
this didn't have like anything in that.
And it, at the bottom, he's kind of like TBD, TBD, TBD. Yeah. And so then I think that's kind of where maybe like the special equipment would be something that you would love to hear.
That's for a tabletop point of view. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But no, overall, I think it's like, super super nice, really great character development, really great explanations and rationalizations behind the points, and just like there isn't much snowflaking here.
Yeah,
it's all pretty solid.
Sorry, just because you guys are reading it, is it Jotunbee as in like honeybee, B-E-E?
It's B-Y with a little accent on the Y, so I have no idea how it's supposed to be said. It's Jotunbee or Jotunbee. One of those.
Okay. I just rolled with Eric's pronunciation.
Because like with the whole like hive mentality, well not mentality, but hive type structure and stuff, I was like picturing like essentially giant bees.
Well, they
describe
insectoid,
them
as, right?
Yeah exactly.
And they have wings.
You're right. Yeah.
But I don't think they're fuzzy.
No, they're not like a one-for-one comparison.
Yeah.
With stingers and everything.
They've got a queen, they've got daughters.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the description.
I'd love to see it.
Insect-like composition.
Give me an army of that using Tyranid rules.
Yeah, it doesn't really, but they do have two legs and four arms.
Six limbs. The warriors do.
No, two legs, four arms. They do say the warriors, but so, I would assume that, like, the warrior is also described as a standard drone soldier. Four arms, two legs.
But to me, like, there's obvious parallels kind of between, like, the Tyranids, because that's going to be the most simple insect parallel. And then, like, Tyranids can branch very, very drastically.
Well, I mean, they have striders, long legs, can walk or sit on water surfaces.
So, like, to me, there's definitely, like,
they probably all have different
really strong variations between them.
Maybe.
So, extra arms or fewer arms wouldn't be out of the question, I'd say.
Wings, no wings. Yeah. Three eyes, two eyes.
There are a couple with wings.
Yeah. That's cool.
Let's move on.
All right. And the best for last. Here we go. My reading voice. Adam wrote us this tale. Doesn't have a title. Already, that's a point.
Just a minor criticism.
I would like a title next time, please. The 515th Cadian Regiment, the 5x5s, was founded as a shock troop line infantry regiment in 992.M41. They served with distinction under the original commander, Colonel Ezekiel Masters, in various campaigns in the Segmentum Obscurus before being recalled to the defense of Cadia during the buildup of the 13th Black Crusade. They fought on the surface of Cadia, however, their sector was hard hit with the company...
I can't read! you guys were investing all of this podcast money into his reading lessons.
It's not going well.
We hit
a
wall.
It's a waste of money. Was hit hard... Hey, Eric, you want to read a story?
No. Well, I can.
Okay. It's going to be so much better for Adam when he has somebody who's functional reading it.
I don't...
Like, I just ruined this man's hard work. He's going to have to go burn it. Yeah, burn all his models.
Do you actually want me to read it?
Sure.
Okay. They fought on the surface of Cadia. However, their sector was hard hit with the complete destruction of many regiments and the partial destruction of the rest.
Oh, that's what I was trying to say.
Under the orders of their army group commander, Captain Matthias Kingson was promoted to replace the dead Colonel Masters and use his existing 5x5 shock troopers to act as the base to a temporary scratch regiment amalgamating several partially destroyed formations of infantry, armor, artillery, and militarum tempestus units. This temporary force, under the command of now Colonel Kingson, continued the dogged resistance until its evacuation was ordered. Directly after the fall, the temporary regiment, still bearing the title 515 for bureaucratic purposes, was rerouted to put down a small cultist uprising. The brief campaign was a major success. In the aftermath, Colonel Kingson wrote up his findings, providing in great detail the effectiveness of his combined arms regiment and how it functioned better than the sum of its parts. He petitioned for its formation to be permanently authorized and reinforced to continue the fight in the emperor's name. Upon receiving this eloquent and reasonable report, an adept of the Adeptus Administratum went to deny said request straight away. However, an inquisitor of the Ordos Hereticus was investigating this adept for forwarding heretical dispatches through the Administratum. While inconclusive if this individual was knowingly participating in heresy or simply letting some duties slip through the cracks, the inquisitor gave it not much thought, as the punishment was all the same. The adept's replacement, eager to get out of the watchful eye of this particular inquisitor, took the outstanding requests he had inherited and marked them approved or denied, without taking much or any time to look at them. He used that particular method to work through the messages marked for his office, then speedily put in for an off-world transfer.
Smart man.
As such, munitions, troops, vehicles, weaponry, supplies, and other requested materials were shipped to the newly sanctioned 515th Canadian Combined Armed Regiment.
Canadian.
Is that what I said?
Yeah.
Canadian Combined Arms Regiment, remaining under the command of Colonel Kingson.
I like it.
All yeah. thanks to some terrified Adeptus Administratum.
Oh, so
worker.
Good. Yeah, that's a classic. Like,
that's pretty good.
And yeah. I love the time setting right before the 13th Black Crusade. I love that the guy's trying to get off world yeah, right like, before the 13th Black Crusade.
There's just so much of like, yeah, that's what the Imperium would do. Like, upon hearing the reasonable request, yeah. like, there's just so much of like, yeah, that's the Imperium. No, I like that story. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
short, sweet. We short had our highs, sweet. Our lows. Yeah. There's humor. There's sadness. There's mm-hmm. tragedy. I think there's a love story in there.
I recall that.
You can read between the lines. It seems a little hot between
the Inquisitor and the Adept.
Yeah,
as he's torturing them, they're getting that really soft lighting and the music as their eyes are meeting.
I don't know, that's what I read into it.
Well, people see what they want to see, you know.
Christian's man of love.
Yeah. It was actually. Nice.
Yeah.
Just simple. Just a nice simple little thing.
This must be his army. He must play he must play guardsmen.
I also like their name 5x5. That's kinda cool. It's like rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very easily. Yeah. Shock troopers. It's kinda cool. Mm-hmm.
Send us some pictures.
Yeah. That's always what it's gonna be. Like, do you have a painted army? Please send us pictures. Mm-hmm. And it's kinda cool. He's put his force like right in the forefront. Yeah. Like
that's rough.
He's added like a real place without being like the focus of the place. Yeah, he's just saying no, like part of it.
We saved Cadia.
Exactly. Like I was there when Abaddon fought. Like no, you probably weren't. So this is kind of cool. Like it's in the middle, but it's not.
So I wonder what does he do with his lord now that Cadia is destroyed?
Yeah, what's his army doing? Yeah. Did his army survive?
Like, I'm assuming it did because he poured thousands of dollars.
That's right. No.
Beautifully painted his entire army.
He dipped it all in Easy Clean, stripped them all. He's ready for something new.
Something new.
The 3x4s.
You got this, Adam. Start a new one.
Send us a message. Because what happened to your regiment? I'm assuming they got off planet like lots of regiments did. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, like, where are they fighting now? Yeah. Have they lost so many? Are they trying to rebolster their numbers with other regiments? Or are they being absorbed by something? Yeah. Or
did they die on Cadia?
Did they die on Cadia?
Then that would be fine.
Yeah.
That's actually really...
40K. He's had since, like, the 80s, and he's like, time for something new. This is how they go out.
And then he sells them all. Yeah. We're going to see an ad on, like, Kijiji in a little while that's, like, selling the 5x5 regiment.
You want to hear my lore? Check out Lorehammer.
Adam! What have you done?
What have you done?
Sweet. Yeah. So let us know, Adam, because that'd be really sweet to hear what's like happened after Cadia fell.
And this is when we get that horrible message that they did save Cadia.
Yeah. Oh, like, my God.
Cadia, what do you mean Cadia fell?
Neither the planet nor the guard broke. Nobody broke. Yeah. Cool. Thanks for sharing, guys, obviously.
Keep sending your listener lore to us. Send it to Lorehammer
podcast
at gmail.com. If you send it to the Facebook page,
it can get lost really easily.
I lose it so quickly. So
yeah, shoot us an email. Obviously, we want to get back into the swing of making a lot more of these, and because we got a decent backlog.
Oh yeah, we have so many
of this. So thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you next episode.
Peace.